thousand times, and more times than I can count. I have called you mine, you have stood by me.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. This is going to be an empowering hour, the latest on health and healing and how to live a longer life. Also, something brand new, how to detect your risk of a sudden heart attack or stroke. I'm going to talk about plaque. PLAC. It's a blood test that alerts physicians and you to the urgent need to implement aggressive protective measures. You haven't heard about it? You'll get it first here. The newest information from Dr. Lori Barclay. Saving lives. That's what we do. You'll see how. Also, the latest on vitamin D from multiple studies, the omega-3 fatty acids, what they're doing to reduce your opportunity for a heart attack or stroke, and also Alzheimer's disease. The dangers of indoor air pollution, the things we take for granted and we shouldn't. And also, we're going to take an in-depth look at where obesity is most common and in every single state, including supposedly the healthiest state, they still have almost 20% of their entire adult population are obese. And that's the healthiest state. Then you start getting into some of these sicker states. Wow, you won't believe it. And then if you compare the Caucasian to the African-American community, it's just staggering how many are obese, then the educated to the non-educated. So I've broken all this down to show you who's overweight, where, what we can do about it, what are the solutions. My guest in the first part of our program will be Louis Clark. Louis Clark is the President and Corporate and Financial Accountability Director of the Government Accountability Project. That's the nation's largest whistleblower protection and advocacy organization. And we're going to talk about the recent harassment of whistleblower attorney Raddick and whistleblowing today under the Obama administration. This is a part of our ongoing series on fascism in the United States. Also today, I will be adding to that by talking about the case of the missing military-industrial complex money. How much are we talking about? $20 million? $20 billion? No. $7 trillion. You heard me right. $7 trillion unaccounted for. So we're going to show you how big government and big business work together. That's fascism. We're also going to talk about environmental factors today. And the latest on how they're using water in water-deprived states for hydrofracking instead of for human consumption. That's not going to work out well. And a commentary today from Bruce Dixon from a Black Agenda Report. His concern and others within the African-American community who are journalists are saying, why are federal prosecutors declaring mass incarceration is fine and are going to continue it, and Obama and Holder are supporting them? Well, we'll talk about that, and we'll have a commentary from him. The worst states in America to be poor if you're a kid. And also the newest information on when you're giving your kid the pneumococcal vaccine, be aware it's being linked to a greater risk of getting the disease. We'll share all that with you. Hey, a classy act for Chevron, unlike British Petroleum, when that big oil company had a catastrophe where a Chevron-owned natural gas plant in Bobtown, Pennsylvania, exploded, injuring one worker and presumably killing another. They hadn't found him after 5 days. Needless to say, the public was angry and concerned. Not to worry. Chevron did the best that any major corporate person in America could do. Person, because remember, they're now considered a person. They solved the problem. They went to every person in town and gave them a free coupon for a large pizza. Well, that's enough, isn't it? I guess there were no protests. So you can destroy a town, kill some people, pollute the environment, but as long as people get their pizza, everything should be all right. We'll deal with that. We have a lot to talk about. Later on today, when I'm helping one of our sister stations, we're broadcast all over the world and all over America, but we're trying to help our sister station, BAI. I'm going to be going in-depth in something they have not heard before. An in-depth original investigative report on the hidden hand, the forces behind America's economic and social destruction. This took over a year. More than 40 scholars were consulted. This was fully vetted. This is accurate information. So this will show you who's behind the destruction of our economy for the rest of us, the benefit to them, and our Constitution and our rights. You won't want to miss that. Let's begin. More Americans are using supplements. This is according to the Journal of Nutrition. That's good news. Research was done by the National Institutes of Health, the Office of Dietary Supplements, and the National Center for Health Statistics. And what they're showing is that virtually 54% of all males and females in the United States are using supplements. And that is a good thing. The limitation here is that they tend to be older and more educated. Now, that's not bad for them, but it's bad for all the people who are younger who believe they don't need any supplementation, in fact, don't have to worry about their diet. They tend to be more healthy, have less disease, are not susceptible at the obesity epidemic that's inflicting Americans. So there's a lot to be said for using your supplements intelligently. So good for you. Researchers are recommending a greater intake of vitamin D to lower the risk of all serious disease. This is a major study, University of California, San Diego School of Medicine. What they have found is this, published in Anti-Cancer Research, that when you take good amounts of vitamin D, let's say 2,000 to 6,000, 7,000 units a day, you're raising your opportunity for lessening your chance of disease, including breast cancer and other diseases. And that's terrific. So get your vitamin D from sunshine or take it with supplements. Reduce your risk of breast cancer, colon cancer, multiple sclerosis, and type 1 diabetes, end quote, from the study. Also, vitamin D deficiency, when you don't have enough, impairs your lung development. This is from the peer-reviewed journal of the American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine. And there was a study in here that showed when you're deficient, don't have enough vitamin D, your lungs will end up paying a price for that. Another study on vitamin D, just to show you how significant this inexpensive, easy-to-get vitamin is, it says, and this is from the peer-reviewed journal Neurology, and this was done at Australian National University, higher vitamin D levels equal lower risk of multiple sclerosis. That's important. Now, let me just give you a little background on this. It was 5 years ago that I did a study. I think this was the 45th clinical study with human beings in a lifestyle and behavior modification study. Now, none of this is medical, even though there are medical supervisors in all of my studies. And in this case, you could not get into the study unless you had a pre-diagnosed and pre-treated condition such as multiple sclerosis, Alzheimer's, ALS, dementia, and then you could get in if you had that condition for at least 3 years. We had some remarkable improvements. Some people virtually today are considered normal, and at least two are considered cured. One was with multiple sclerosis. And I remember the very first day that we were doing our intake, where we film everyone, so we have a beginning point, and we already had their medical records, and our board-certified neurologist had reviewed all this, determined these were legitimate people and candidates for being in the study. And the study went on for over a year. In any case, this guy couldn't even walk up the steps. And so he was about to turn around and go home, and his wife came up, and so we went down, and we literally helped him up. His name's Kenny. Heck of a nice guy. He was a plumber from New Jersey. Well, over the period, not overnight, none of this happens overnight, but over a period of 16 months, Kenny continued to improve until he was at a point where he virtually could not be detected as having multiple sclerosis by his own neurologist, two sets of neurologists. And yet these very same neurologists, a year and a half before, said that because of his tremors, his muscle fatigue, his inability to use certain muscles, his inability to focus, he would have to now put railings around his home to support himself as he walked from the bathroom to the bedroom, etc. And then finally, there would just be the bed with railings, and then there would just be being fed by a straw until he died. That's all they had. And today, I can tell you that Kenny is completely healthy. His doctor says we can no longer find demyelinization of your sheath, and they never heard of that before. They didn't think it was possible. Well, they were right. But so were all the people, all the experts, all of the best minds in engineering and mechanical engineering and structural design. No human being believed that you could break a four-minute mile. And they were all right until Bannister broke it, and then they were all wrong. And then quickly thereafter, 10 other people broke it. What were they waiting for? Because the belief that something couldn't happen became the third rail of them even trying. So let it be known, let us go on the record of stating that multiple sclerosis has been cured. If anyone else knows of another case in the world, we couldn't find one. We searched the scientific literature. And Kenny is available with his wife to speak to anyone. We've had Kenny speak with lots of people. But vitamin D was a very important part of that. That was not all. There were about 80 other things, but vitamin D certainly was a part of it. Also, we've been told, well, what's the point of doing anything? It's in your genes. No, it's not. In fact, tomorrow, I'm going to share with you the latest research in anti-aging medicine. I was just on the phone with the head of the International Congress in Anti-Aging Medicine. I'll be making a presentation with some of my newest research there in about 4 months at their national conference. I've made about 5 different presentations with different clinical studies. And we were talking about the latest science. It's phenomenal how much it's grown. So we now know that within our bodies, there are cells capable of rejuvenating heart muscle, brain. And so I'll be talking about the science of rejuvenation and reversing aging tomorrow. Things you have not heard for a better part of the whole hour, so you won't want to miss that. But one thing we're all aware of, lifestyle trumps genes in longevity. According to an article in the Journal of Internal Medicine, it is the actions we take each day that determine how we're going to live, what diseases we're going to get, and the quality of our life in the process. And what we have found in this study shows this. It's the choices you make every day, the choosing to smoke or not smoke. There was an entire generation, actually there were 3 generations in America that drank and smoked and did not exercise after high school or college and thought that was normal and acceptable. And they all died prematurely because of it and died of diseases they didn't have to. Now we know better. So just remember, every choice you make will have a difference. The American Journal of Pathology has reported on some good research that shows that free radicals are implicated in common eye disease. Okay, what does that mean? It means that if free radicals are the primary cause of progressive eye diseases, macular degeneration, cataracts, and glaucoma, then protecting your macula, protecting your lens is crucial. And what's the best way of doing that? Antioxidants throughout the day, not just once a day. You should be taking vitamin C 6 to 8 times a day. And the largest amount of vitamin C you should take is at bed. First, you're going to thin your blood and lessen the chance of having a stroke overnight. And a lot of people have their strokes and heart attacks in the middle of the night. So that can help prevent that. Separately, you're helping the body facilitate detoxification overnight, and that's really good for you. And then, on top of that, you are helping to repair your skin and especially getting stronger, tighter, healthier skin. One more study on the omega-3 fatty acids showing, quote, scientifically supported ability to reduce blood vessel stiffness. This was published in the British Journal of Nutrition. Quote, the findings of the study reveal that supplementation with omega-3 offers a scientifically supported means of reducing arterial stiffness. Now, that's important. Reduction of arterial stiffness account for some of the purported cardioprotective events. Okay, here we have hundreds, thousands of studies on the omega-3s. This is just the latest one. Now, why should this be important to you? Because of what I'm going to talk about next deals with arterial stiffness in part. Do you remember when the newsman over on the Sunday morning Meet the Press dropped dead, Tim Russert? And they looked later and said, well, that shouldn't happen because he was diagnosed with a heart condition, but he was on medication and he was exercising. In fact, he had had a stress test shortly before his heart attack, and it showed that he was fine. But at autopsy, it revealed the cholesterol plaque rupturing in an arterial coronary arterial place choked off the blood supply through that artery, and that's what caused his fatal heart attack. Now, an atherosclerotic plaque, also known as an atheroma, is a deposit of harmful fats or lipids on the blood vessel wall. And when the plaque ruptures, these tiny little pieces resembling chunks of oatmeal break loose and suddenly clog a blood vessel, causing heart attack or stroke. Now, cardiology experts noted the crucial difference between gradual narrowing of the arteries, which had been controlled in Russert, versus the sudden fatal blockage of a main coronary artery by rupturing atherosclerotic plaque on the vessel wall. Because about half the people who have a heart attack have no symptoms, especially women. They don't know there's a thing wrong. And then suddenly the pain comes, and they feel the pain in their upper shoulder coming across the chest. They grab their chest, they're dead. Or if they survive, but there was no warning. So it's crucial for everyone to recognize that if you're overweight, you're at risk. Diabetic, you're at risk. High blood pressure, you're at risk. Don't play with this game. You will lose. Nobody wins. Nobody ever wins when you use hubris, indifference, distraction against health. Now, similarly, acute debilitating stroke, also caused in many cases by plaque rupture, often occurs without warning. Imaging tests, such as a carotid ultrasound or heart computed tomography or CAT scan, can tell us about the current state of the blood vessels supplying the brain and the heart. But even they cannot identify plaque that is vulnerable to rupture. In addition, the computed tomography technology involves radiation exposure, and that's not good. And coronary angiograms requires injections of dye that can cause complications in individuals. That's not good. So you got to understand, heart disease and stroke are number one killers in the United States and worldwide. And you can look at age. You can look at low-density lipoproteins, triglycerides, blood pressure, waist circumference, blood sugar, homocysteine, C-reactive protein, fibrinogen. Those are all factors that show you whether or not you're at risk. So now they have something new. It's called plaque, P-L-A-C. It's a test. It's just a routine blood sample. But what it does is this. It measures blood levels of an enzyme called lipoprotein phospholipase A2. And the enzyme unleashes a chain of harmful events culminating in endothelial dysfunction, which is a pathological abnormality in the blood vessel wall that sets the stage for atherosclerosis and plaque accumulation and rupture. So, you can get this test taken now, and it will tell you whether or not you're at risk, where no other test in medicine can be as accurate. All right, so this is something that can save lives. So make sure you put this down, and you can look at the results. Like if you're low risk, there's about a 200 ng per milliliter. If you're at high risk, it's about 235, and you can get it down. So how then do you end up with healthy arteries, endothelial? Because I've been discussing how to have healthy endothelial lining for a long time. Just follow the advice. Lots of raw food, organic, vegan, don't overeat, exercise, lots of juices, lots of good nutrients, Q10, vitamin C, vitamin E. These help maintain the health and integrity of your major veins and arteries, and that keeps them pliable. It keeps them able to draw in nutrients, and that's what you want. So that's important for all of us. All right? And finally, one more study. Vitamin D helps rid the brain of Alzheimer's plaque. This is in the journal Fluids and Barriers of the CNS, and it talks about research that was done at Tohoku University in Japan, which found that vitamin D was able to help clear the brain of amyloid beta. That's the toxic compound that accumulates in the plaques that occur in the brains of Alzheimer's disease patients. Quote, it was reported that single nucleotide polymorphisms in the vitamin D receptor gene increased the risk of impairment of cognitive function developing Alzheimer's disease, suggesting a relation between serum vitamin D levels and risk of Alzheimer's disease. End quote. In lay language, vitamin D helps rid the brain of Alzheimer's plaque. That's important. I'm Gary Knoll. We're going to immediately go over to our guest who's standing by in Washington, D.C. Let's say hello to Louis Clark, President and Corporate and Financial Accountability Director of the Government Accountability Project, the nation's largest whistleblower protection and advocacy organization. And he frequently negotiates with government and corporate officials on social reform initiatives to protect whistleblowers and protect employees. He also handles numerous cases of widespread financial fraud. He's a graduate from American University and received honorary fellowships for his work on prison reform. And before becoming an attorney, Louis was a Methodist minister, having received his divinity degree from Pacific School of Religion. The website is whistleblower.org. And that is whistleblower in the singular. Nice to have you with us today, Louis.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Before we look at the increase in suppression of whistleblowers under the Obama administration, and now the suppression of the National Security Agency activities, meaning their overreach, their overstepping their boundaries, and going after civil rights attorneys, even journalists, I'd like to discuss the recent incident of one of your leading attorneys at the Government Accountability Project, Ms. Raddick, who was detained and harassed by British officials at the Heathrow Airport on her return from Russia. And for the record, Ms. Raddick is a prominent human rights attorney protecting whistleblowers. She represented the former senior NASA official Thomas Drake when he revealed NASA spying on American citizens, for which he was punished. She was also the attorney for John Walker Lind, who was captured in Afghanistan, unjustifiably persecuted, tortured, and sentenced to 35 years in prison. It's a true travesty of justice. And now she's working on behalf of Edward Snowden, who is still exiled in Russia. Moreover, Ms. Raddick is a former ethics advisor to the Justice Department. So she's a very prominent, experienced, and skilled attorney on constitutional law. So summarize first the recent case of Raddick's detainment and her being placed under a no-fly selectee list and what is called an inhibited persons list. And what do these lists mean within the context of America's bogus war on terrorism, and now how has the Obama Justice Department expanded its harassment and spying on human rights attorneys who represent whistleblowers and individuals who speak out against the corruption and crime of Washington and our domestic and foreign policies. The forum is yours.
Yes, well, first of all, I want to make just one correction, is that when she actually, she did not represent Lind in, you know, the American Taliban. She was actually at the Justice Department, and she blew the whistle on the fact that he was, his rights were violated during its interrogation of him in Afghanistan. So that was her whistleblowing. So she actually was an ethics advisor to the justice at that time. But, yeah, it's outrageous. She was headed actually to Britain for meetings there and was interrogated as she was entering the country. And we do see that as an outrageous violation of essentially international rights. She's a human rights attorney. She should not be questioned by, you know, essentially thug agents as she's trying to enter the country.
Good. Now let's go to some of the stories and other incidents of government intelligence harassment of human and civil rights attorneys such as those in your organization. And is there any legal precedent or law on the books that permits this kind of harassment of attorneys?
Well, no, there isn't. And a matter of fact, I really do think it's a violation of not only the right, you know, not only in terms of ethics rules around attorney-client relationships. I also believe it's an international violation in terms of international travel. I mean, she's representing someone that a country, Russia, has given asylum to as essentially a political victim of harassment, and she represents this person. She should be able to travel without being interrogated at borders, especially, obviously, countries that declare themselves that they are democracies.
All right. Now, although whistleblowers within the government receive the greatest media attention, your organization also protects whistleblowers within the corporate world.
Yes. That
would include banks and Wall Street firms and large transnational firms who engage in illegal practices. However, these cases rarely ever reach the media, and we don't know about them. At The Gap, you handle many of the cases involving financial fraud. So how prevalent are whistleblowers coming forward in the private sector, and how are these cases being handled by the firms?
Well, there's essentially an avalanche of whistleblowing that's occurring throughout our corporate world. Since 2007, Congress has enacted legislation that essentially is now providing whistleblower protections to 80 million people in the private sector, and the rights that they now have to blow the whistle as well as to be protected for doing so are state of the art rights. So there is certainly a recognition in Congress that these people need protections from the corporate world or their particular company, and they have protections that will allow them to have some level of protection for speaking out. And as a result of that, there are definitely an increase in whistleblowing that's occurring. And some of the cases have had quite a bit of attention. I mean, the whistleblowing on Citigroup and Bank of America and Countrywide have been fairly widely reported. I think that one of the questions that that certainly is should be of concern, I guess one of the things that should be of concern, is whether or not the federal government is responding to the concerns that these whistleblowers are coming forward about in terms of are they really making the best use of the information that is now available to them to bring the banks into a line with what the rules are.
candidate Barack Obama had promised greater transparency and accountability during his campaign, which included providing safety for government whistleblowers to publicly speak out against government wrongdoing. However, we've witnessed the exact opposite. This is one of the most secretive, repressive presidential administrations in U.S. history. So characterize for us Obama's policy towards whistleblowers, and what is the government doing to make it more difficult and threatening for employees in government agencies or corporate contractors such as Snowden to speak out against crimes against the Constitution?
Okay. First of all, I'd say that it's the most schizophrenic administrations. The Obama administration has been supportive of the whistleblower protections for corporate America in terms of the 80 million people that I mentioned earlier who now have whistleblower protection. The White House is totally in support of those pieces of legislation. However, in terms of the federal employees themselves, it's a different picture, and particularly in terms of the whistleblowers within the intelligence agencies. On the other hand, the president has issued an executive order that is supposed to provide some level of protection to intelligence whistleblowers. Unfortunately, it's not yet implemented, and it definitely is not implemented in terms of contractors within the intelligence agencies, which is what Snowden actually was. I mean, despite the fact that the president said quite publicly, not only at a press conference, also on the Tonight Show, that Snowden had he followed the executive order, he would have had protection. In fact, that wasn't true, unfortunately. And also, what's important about this administration is it has brought 7 criminal cases against whistleblowers, and that's more than all other presidents combined historically. So it has been repressive in terms of intelligence. It has not been in terms of corporate whistleblowing.
I have completed, after a year of intensive research, a 10-part series on fascism. We interviewed over 400 people and had over 40 different scholars working on this at different points with input. And the thing that amazed me most is how naive people are about their rights. Even people who are supposed to be intelligent, like reading The Nation magazine, I was appalled at what they didn't know. For example, and how indifferent they are. For example, I found that when I asked people, if you demonstrate against something, let's say you demonstrate against gas hydrofracking or closing down a nuclear facility, or you're against GMOs and you join a petition, are you aware that you are being monitored? No, I'm not aware. Are you aware that virtually every rally for anything that protests against government actions is being monitored? We now know that because that came out under a Freedom of Information Act in a lawsuit. For example, every single Occupy Wall Street movement, no matter how small it was, how few people attended, their meetings were infiltrated. Every single action was monitored. Each person involved, even if you were just there out of curiosity to see what was going on, they were monitored, and files were open on them. In fact, it gave details of how many local police departments around the country had people full-time just being infiltrating and being a part of the movements and feeding back information and setting up files, because these people, in effect, were considered terrorists based upon how you could interpret terrorism under the National Defense Authorization Act. And when I said, if you're interested in peace, if you're interested in environmental protection, if you're interested in human rights, if you're interested in any of these actions, you are now considered an enemy. Anyone who protests is considered an enemy of the state for all intents and purposes, because they're keeping track. And once these mammoth bureaucracies start, and these are all privatized, once these bureaucracies start, it's in their interest to try to fuel the flames of paranoia that we've got to watch these people. These people are dangerous, and they might be terrorists. And even the FBI has been engaged in this. And yet people didn't know this. Even people on the left didn't know this. And that's why I went to the extent to find out how deep this goes. Could you give us your insight of what you've seen about how the major corporate interests, not all, but major corporate interests, especially in the military-industrial complex, and government agencies and their lobbyists have worked together to form a protective alliance, and we, the people then who may protest or be against this, are now subject to every one of our phone calls, emails, all of our communications, and our rights to speak out challenged. Your thoughts, please.
Well, my thoughts on it, first of all, is that people have a sense that they have rights that that they don't have. I mean, people sort of, there is a level of complacency, which is quite upsetting, actually, that people are don't know. But as soon as you are considered a dissenter, then you start to see that it's having ramifications. And that you are indeed being monitored in some fashion. And we don't know all. And we didn't even know that bulk collection obviously was occurring, or we certainly didn't have, you know, total proof of that until Snowden. But nevertheless, all this has been happening for many years, certainly since 2001, that we have been living in a surveillance state. And you only really know that if you are choosing to exercise your freedom of speech. You have plenty of, you know, everyone has freedom of speech until they actually speak. And then you find out that there are limitations that they didn't know existed before. And one of those limitations is that they might well be subject to surveillance. And that should be upsetting to people, and I'm hoping it will be, the more and more that we find out about what's going on. And certainly in terms of Jesselyn Raddick being on now a list that we didn't even know existed until recently, which is a list looking at people who are traveling around, you know, and using airports. She herself, after her whistleblowing on the Lind case at the Justice Department, she was indeed put on the no-fly list, which meant every time she traveled, she was subject to interrogation, not dissimilar to what she just experienced once again. And so it's this is something, this is a danger. Looking back at my own history between 1967 and 71, because of my participation in voter registration in Mississippi, I discovered that I was under surveillance. I got my file, I think, 20 years later, and discovered that everything I said that was published in a newspaper, all supportive of civil rights and all of it rather benign, actually, were all recorded in my file. I had 115 pages in my file, and all that was related to statements that I had made either about the Vietnam War or about civil rights, although most of them were about civil rights. So if you really take a stand, then you are at that time a subject of attention from people who you really don't know and don't know anything about, but they certainly know something about you.
But, Louis, it gets worse because they're not just monitoring people. They have also a long, sordid history of being instigators and provocateurs. For example, Operation COINTELPRO, MK Ultra. We found that out with only a few files, six files remaining from that they had destroyed all the rest in the Church Committee. We found out from the former director of the CIA about the assassination of the Dim brothers by the Kennedys. We found out all this after the fact, but also that they had put provocateurs into the Black Panther groups and some of the Black Freedom groups in order to cause destruction, knowing full well that there would be people injured or killed. Now, here's the question. You have a radio station like WBAI. You have a foundation like Pacifica. How in the world could they not have targeted it to infiltrate it, to got people on their local station board and their national board, to got people in positions of power? Because for the last 14 years, this station, this foundation has been eating itself alive. I cannot believe that this is not, and we will not at some point find out that they either currently or have had people trying to destroy it, because we were the only voice in America. Remember, NPR is just Wonder Bread for the brain. It's worthless. I'm talking about someone who could really stand up to tyranny, stand up for women's rights, civil rights, and human rights. We were the only voice. Hence, all the other activists, including the very people who would sue the government, Daniel Ellsberg, Chris Hedges, Naomi Wolf, they all came on different Pacifica programs. So could you imagine what they've been doing now that we're finding out what they are doing and have done to other organizations? And yet you talk with the average person around Pacifica or any of the stations, and they seem disconnected. There's a cognitive disconnect that could this have been the reason that we've had such internal turmoil, the infighting, and I believe is absolutely a crucial part of it, because now we are virtually the smallest station in New York on one of it, not Progressive Radio Network, where you're on now, and our sister station, but one of them has 0.01%. 0.01% audience, last in all of New York. There was a time, however, when it was right up there in most of its programming with commercial radio. That doesn't happen by accident. I believe that the national security state is smart with the private contractors. They can infiltrate, they can spy, they read every email, they know what's going on, and they take advantage of it. Your final thoughts, please.
Well, my final thought is that we need to have another church commission. Obviously, we need, you know, and that was the commission that essentially exposed the COINTELPRO program of surveillance that existed in the 60s and early 70s. And we need to have another high-level commission to examine what is going on currently in this country in terms of surveillance of our citizens who choose to speak up about waste, fraud, and abuse and other government essentially wrongdoing.
I'll give one final thought, and I'd like your critique of this. If you or your organization was found guilty of, let's say, financial malfeasance, it would make a news story. Someone would be punished. Probably someone would go to jail. And yet, according to James Hall, the case of the missing military-industrial complex money is that when it was done, when an accounting was done and a major article was written by William Hartung, the military-industrial complex revised shifting patterns of military contracting post 9/11, and it talked about missing. Here's the amount missing: $7.2 trillion, completely unaccounted for. Jonathan Turley in Pentagon Plugs, which is a new study about the hidden trillions missing money and equipment. And here's what he says, quote, "A new report has detailed how the military has cooked the books to hide trillions," that's right, trillions, "in missing money and equipment. The military calls them plugs, a curious term for fraud. These are knowingly fake figures used to hide the fact that there is no accurate record of the money. The plugs are generally the work of the Office of Defense Finance and Accounting Service, the Pentagon's main accounting agency. Required to complete an audit, the staff simply faked the numbers," end quote. So when you see who they work with, when you see that, for example, Lockheed Martin was not only the top contractor for the Pentagon, but also raked in a number of departments, Department of Energy, the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of State, the Department of the National Aeronautics and Space Administration. Those contracts were $24 billion, $15 billion, $5 billion, $13 billion, respectively. And yet, they're not audited. No one in the government's audited. No one's held accountable. We can find them stealing or hiding trillions of dollars, and it's a proof that they've done it. Not a single complaint, official lawsuit, nothing from the Justice Department. That, to me, is fascism, loud and clear. Your final thoughts, please.
Well, my final thought is on that issue is that you're absolutely right. For 30 years, the Pentagon has not been auditable. They haven't been auditing. And those people who raised concerns at the IG in the case of the National Security Agency whistleblowers who actually went to the IG of the Department of Defense, those people ended up being criminally investigated and one criminally prosecuted. And yet, you're right, there's these trillions of dollars that are missing and aren't accountable. You know, it's a disaster.
So you can steal or hide. You can fraudulently use 6.3 trillion dollars. That's okay. It can be found out. That's okay. But if you report on it, then you go to jail.
Yeah.
What a country. Louis Clark, thank you for the good work that you're all doing down there. And again, the website, whistleblowersingular.org, whistleblower.org. And Louis Clark and your whole team, keep working on our behalf.
Thanks so much. We will.
I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. We're going to open up our calls now for TalkBack. This is the part of the program where you have a chance to express your concerns, your views, your questions, and your statements. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. I'm Gary Knoll. Back in a moment. Welcome you all. I'm Gary Knoll. If you don't believe that it's rough outside in the agenda of us seeking to protect our freedoms, freedom of choice, freedom of speech, freedom from unreasonable search and seizure, then you should listen to the thoughts of George Carlin when it came to just the freedom to have a child go to school and to learn how to be a critical thinker. To join those of us growing up as baby boomers who had that right. And today, education, more often than not, is about learning how to take tests rather than how to be able to grow up, go out, and see what the world is really like and be able to challenge it.
Consumption. It's the new national pastime. Baseball, it's consumption. The only true, lasting American value that's left, buying things. Buying things. People spending money they don't have on things they don't need. Money they don't have on things they don't need. So they can max out their credit cards and spend the rest of their lives paying 18% interest on something that costs $12.50. And they didn't like it when they got it home anyway. Not too bright, folks. Not too f***ing bright. But if you talk to one of them about this, if you isolate one of them, you sit them down rationally and you talk to them about the low IQs and the dumb behavior and the bad decisions, right away they start talking about education. That's the big answer to everything. Education. They said we need more money for education. We need more books, more teachers, more classrooms, more schools. We need more testing for the kids. You say to them, well, you know, we've tried all of that and the kids still can't pass the test. They say, oh, don't you worry about that. We're going to lower the passing grades. And that's what they do in a lot of these schools now. They lower the passing grades so more kids can pass. More kids pass, the school looks good, everybody's happy, the IQ of the country slips another 2 or 3 points, and pretty soon all you'll need to get into college is a f***ing pencil. Got a pencil? Get the f*** in there. It's physics. Then everyone wonders why 17 other countries graduate more scientists than we do. Education. Politicians know that word. They use it on you. Politicians have traditionally hidden behind three things. The flag, the Bible, and children. No child left behind. No child left behind. Oh, really? Well, it wasn't long ago you were talking about giving kids a head start. Head start, left behind. Someone's losing f***ing ground here. But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting f***ed by a system that threw them overboard 30 f***ing years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hardworking people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hardworking people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich f***ers who don't give a f*** about them. They don't give a f*** about you. They don't give a f*** about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Yeah. You know? And nobody seems to notice, nobody seems to care. That's what the owners count on, the fact that Americans will probably remain willfully ignorant of the big red, white, and blue that's being jammed up their every day. Because the owners of this country know the truth. It's called the American dream, because you have to be asleep to believe it.
George Carlin giving his views. Talk back. Let's say hello to G from Hackensack, New Jersey. Hi, G.
Thank you for being a human being that you are, and I love you. I really appreciate what George Carlin said, because I wanted your opinion. You know, what is the main component, black, white, Asian, any of us, especially those that have privilege, that separate ourselves, because we need the same air to breathe. We need the same water. What is it about us, especially those that have privilege and money or color, that wants to continually separate at the same time, hollering, coming together, and we wind up in the same garbage together unless a disaster happens. Then we pull together for a minute. Then we back to pulling apart. Thank you so much, Mr.
Thank you. I would answer that with Albert Camus, who said, "Nothing is more despicable than respect based upon fear." And so they have learned how to create fear. And by creating fear, and using Sean Hannity on the right and others on the left, they have created a whole atmosphere of fear. And while we're looking at what we should be afraid of, they're confiscating our right to make informed choices. Wasn't it Maria Curie who said, "Nothing in life is to be feared, is only to be understood"? That is the issue. These people create fear because they know that with fear, we no longer have a reasoned response. We're no longer mindful of the choices we make. We're no longer coming from a balanced, objective, and rational spiritual position. We're coming in insecurity to them for our security, without answers to them for our answers. And they're always going to use it against us. Let's say hello to Imani from Brooklyn. Hi, Imani, your turn. Imani, you're on.
Yes. Gary?
Yes.
Yes, thank you. Peace, I would say. How are you today?
Great, thank you.
That's wonderful. I'm grateful to have connected with you. A little nervous, but I caught a latter portion of your broadcast. And, of course, any of this subject matter here that's very prominent at this time, covert, overt, the whole spectrum of conspiracies and things that are going on, this is a highlight. And I'm making this statement in particular because there's been a few broadcasts that you've touched on this type of matter before, and thank God I got through to you, because I wondered, are you familiar with targeted individual, a.k.a. known as TI? These are people who are victims of what is considered high-tech harassment, which involves microwave, ultrasound, pulse, electromagnetic frequency technology.
We're coming up to less than 30 seconds in our program.
Yes.
Yes, I am. And to show you how legitimate your concern is, was it not all the employees at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow who were coming down with immune-related dysfunction, headaches, and all forms of skin conditions and internal organs collapsing? It later turned out that it was because of pulsed electromagnetic waves against them and by the Russians, and they had to close down the embassy. Then when they closed down the embassy, they found out when it was rebuilt that all these devices were in there.
Wow.
So, yes, that is going on, and even some of the things that they're using now against demonstrators are these pulsed waves. These pulsed waves will send out a wave, and when it hits you, it virtually immobilizes you. And these have been used and photographed and filmed repeatedly.
Yeah.
They also have trucks that can go up and down, and vans that go up and down a street.
Mm-hmm.
And they have these in every city in America, and they can see in your home. They can see the heat imaging of your body. They can hear your conversations.
Yeah.
This has been going on for at least 12 years.
Wow.
Now we find out they've been listening to every phone call, not just who you call, but your actual communication, every photograph you've sent.
Yes.
Now they have psychologists who are working on looking at what emails you've done. If you've gone to a porn site, what are your sexual interests? They want to profile on you so they can use it against you.
Yes,
why would
I understand.
The government need to know what someone's private thoughts are, what kind of correspondence they've had with another person? It's none of their damn business, but they've made it their business. So these are important issues. We're on it. We're broadcasting it. We'll continue to do so, and thank you for bringing it to our attention.
I would like just one last thing quickly.
But we're out of time. We got to go. I'm sorry, but I'm glad that you did bring it to our attention. And for all the other people, because I'm told that the phones are, blasting away here, we'll take more time on tomorrow's show. So please call back on tomorrow's show. Right now, we're out of time for our sister stations. I will be continuing on live on our sister station in New York for 2 more hours, where I'll be reading from this very important document that everyone should read about the hidden hand. You need to read this. This is crucial. For everyone else, thank you very much for listening, and we'll look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Now let's say hello to who's there? Do we have Luann Panessi there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, Luann.
Hi. Yesterday you mentioned your Fertile Earth restaurant on the air, and I got an email from someone named Tori, and she says, I came to New York City in the early 70s, and I was a vegetarian, but I was not able to find any vegetarian restaurants in New York City at the time. I lived in Alphabet City on Avenue B, and I heard about your Fertile Earth restaurant on 108th Street on the Upper West Side. So I went up there one day, and sure enough, it was great. There were only 2 entrees, and you and your brother were dishing out the food, and the place was packed. In fact, there was a line outside, and what was really amazing was that you took smoothies out and handed them out to the people waiting in line. When I did get to eat, it was the best vegetarian meal I had ever eaten, and she said that the menu changed every day, everything was organic, and came from your farm upstate. But I also found out that it was a melting pot for all of these artists and intellects and political activists and creative people from New York City. Amazingly, you kept the meals at $2.50. 3 months later, I moved up there by Columbia University, and I got a job in a bookstore. Each day, that restaurant was my dining room. And after all these years, I remember a dish called the tofu Orleans, the Sicilian string beans, and the white and dark pudding. She says, you were the only one that created that, and no one has come close to that since then. I hope you do another restaurant again. And here's her question. She says, you've done a lot of firsts, I've noticed, things that were innovative and not done before. For example, the Progressive Radio Network, the Fertile Earth Restaurant. You had the first food co-op, the first juice bar. You even had a health food push cart. She said, I think it was called Here Comes the Sun. You had the first berry powder and other chlorophyll powders, the first program on PBS on aging, your homestead villa, and the first documentary to go after the FDA with the drugging of our children. Her question is this, Gary. She says, why do you do all this? And she says, what motivates you? She says, and where do all of these ideas come from?
These ideas come from my imagination. It was Publius Syrus who said, the eyes are not responsible when the mind does the seeing. I believe that every human being is living a parallel life, one that they have adapted to and one that they desire to be living in. The key is to surrender that which you have adapted to and try to step foot into that that is of all unknowns. No certainties, no guarantees, lots of risks, but also it stimulates the excitement of being alive, of being able to do something that maybe has not been done before or maybe has not been done in the same way before, and to see how well you can do it, what lessons you can learn, and then once done, surrender it and go on to something else. I believe that we hold on to things too long, long after it's lessened to a very low vibrational point. The highest vibration we have in life when we're doing something that excites us because we're initially engaged in it. And I believe that we should open up our creativity, look at the world around us, and see how much better the world could be if we simply contributed that unique creative insight that we all have. That's what motivates me. Hope that answers your question. I got to run. See you all tomorrow.